Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. And back at Studio A with my guest this morning, as I mentioned, from San Juan Health Partners Pediatrics. My guest this morning, Dr. Vijay Alinga, is here this morning. Good morning, doctor. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
You're welcome. Great to have you here. Also, Jonathan Palmer is joining us again, nurse practitioner. Good morning to you. Welcome back to KSJE.
Morning, Scott. Thanks for having us.
Thank you both for coming in to talk about children's health, as I mentioned. And of course, tis the season. There's a lot of sniffles and things going on. Flu, of course, I think, in everyone's minds. But Dr. Lingle, let me start with you a little bit about what types of things are you seeing in the office these days? What are kids coming to see you with?
So we see lots of sick visits for sniffles or diarrhea or vomiting. We are seeing lots of dehydration kits, and we have some kits with respiratory illnesses, which is affecting their lungs, called reactive airway disease or respiratory syncytial virus causing bronchiolitis. So many kinds of things which are happening now in the community because of transmissible infectious diseases.
Right. Yeah. And is that pretty normal for this time of year to see these types of things with the change in the weather, I guess, or just moving inside, maybe not being outside as much?
Definitely, because of the weather, we don't be going outside a lot, and we are inside the house because of the warmth or whatever. So the transmission of diseases is very easy. And there is some theory about mucous membranes in our nose are more susceptible now to take in viruses. Mostly it is because of the environment, I think.
Right, right. But pretty normal for yes. This time. You're nothing yes. that's new, I guess, right? And of course, flu season is fast approaching. If it's not here already, I think maybe you've already seen a couple of cases.
Flu, to be honest with you, I had a patient with symptoms of flu, but when we have tested, it was negative flu. But we have seen COVID, paraflu, adenovirus, and I have seen RSV. Lots of RSV in hospital. Kids are coming with RSV for hospitalization.
Got you. Interesting. And Mr. Palmer, let me turn to you. RSV is this but this is respiratory virus, correct, that we're seeing?
Correct. The RSV, you might have heard last year, was affecting some of our older population pretty severely. We used to joke that our COVID and RSV were kind of opposite. A child could have COVID and give it to an adult and they get really sick. Whereas the opposite is true of RSV. The older people can get it, give it to the babies, and they get pretty sick from it. So we are seeing a lot of cases of that in the outpatient arena where I spend all my time, and in the hospital where Dr. Linga and some of our others take care of the kids there. We see quite a bit of that. It's on the rise right now. It's kind of been relentless this year. The thing started spreading before school even started, and then once the kids got all together, it's been spreading like crazy. Ah. That's part of life.
Right. But that's what happens when you get the kids together, right? And it's just one of those things, which is why some of the things we learned as a child and even during the pandemic, washing our hands and maybe not touching everything and things like that still hold true pretty much if we want to stay healthy.
Correct. Yeah. The basics are always the best.
Right.
You know, eat healthy, sleep, wash your hands. Try to stay away from sick people if you can. That's a bit impossible when you live in a house with a bunch of children or you go to school. But we do the best we can. For the babies, one of the best protections is breastfeeding. We see much less disease as far as respiratory illness or the severity thereof when kids are breastfed. And that can make a big difference.
That's really important and a good point, I think, too, because that I think there's a lot of studies, too, that point to breastfeeding as helping with immune systems and things like that for babies, newborns?
Definitely, yeah, that's one of the best ways to protect them I mean, the studies show all kinds of things, less obesity, higher IQs, definitely less illness, when the formula is there when we need it, of course. And we work with parents no matter what they choose to do. One of the things that is exciting this year in the RSV realm is there's some new, we could call them drugs, monoclonal antibodies, that are not quite available. We've had a real expensive one in the past that you probably heard about, Synagis, that requires special authorization, special criteria to be met. Now there's some new things and really developed because of all the research that was done with COVID. Those are now being produced. This year there's not much availability, so again, the criteria is very, very specific. But in the future, definitely next year, pregnant mothers at a certain time in their pregnancy can be vaccinated from that, depending on, or vaccinated, but not technically vaccinated, but given this medicine, mm-hmm. and protecting the babies when they're born during the winter when we see all this RSV. And then children can qualify for that as well. It's just unfortunate that it's not quite available in our area, but will be in the future and make a big difference with hospitalizations and illness.
Wow, that is interesting. I had not heard that, and so that is kind of exciting research to come out of the pandemic, I guess, is what you're referring to. And of course, having these available, and I guess as they become more mass-produced, the prices should come down. Is that also the hope?
Yeah, the price is actually much better than the older form of it that's still being used, and that's a great thing. I mean, much, much more affordable, but still very expensive. However, it makes sense. If we can keep them out of the hospital, we all save a lot of money, and if we can save lives, that's the most important thing.
Right. Very, very true. Dr. Linga, with this newer treatment and some of these things that are coming, that's got to be exciting and I guess important for folks, for both of you, to kind of stay up to date on new techniques, new treatments for some of the diseases and viruses that you see in your office.
Yeah, this is very interesting and very interesting research which has come up. You can protect the baby before the baby is born by giving RSV vaccine to the pregnant mom in between 32 to 36 weeks. That is the time when a placenta is the barrier in between the fetus and the mother, which gives both food and oxygen to the baby. That sucks all the antibodies from the mother and gives to the baby. That protects the baby as soon as the baby is born with tons of antibodies which the mother has made for RSV, and then now the baby is protected from RSV infection for at least 6 months. Studies are well proven, well safe for the mother and also for the baby, and number of infections for the baby coming with RSV infections to the clinic or hospitalization or ICU care has come down because of the RSV vaccination in the mom. There is other way to protect. If the mom did not get RSV vaccine, the other way to protect is this monoclonal antibodies, which my colleague has talked. This is a monoclonal antibody like any monoclonal antibody which we have seen previously also. We have seen during COVID time. And these are available for many diseases. So these monoclonal antibodies, what is beauty about this time is, like they have done, this monoclonal antibodies will be released slowly into the baby bloodstream over quite a length of time. It's usually 3 to 6 months. So before the season, you give this monoclonal antibodies that will protect the baby for next 5 to 6 months. Beauty is number of visits because of this monoclonal antibodies to the clinic, means baby having the symptoms have come down by 80%, hospitalizations have come down by 80%, and ICU care has come down by 80%. Overall, this medicine has helped for the babies for first 6 months of life with RSV. So the current guidelines are, if the baby is less than 8 months, no need of any risk factors or anything. The baby is eligible for getting RSV monoclonal antibodies. But the reason why it is not available is the production-wise, it is not yet. It's the AstraZeneca which is making it, and they are marketing with Sanofi. So there is no enough production available in the market. That's why it's not available immediately, but definitely we are working on it to get into our clinics so that as soon as the baby is born by day 3 of life, we can give the dose if the parents are looking forward for that. Other good thing is we live in Navajo Nation, the Native American population, and the kids who have cardiac condition or respiratory or the muscle conditions or neurological conditions or cystic fibrosis, they can get for second year. So this medicine can be given during the second year of the life. So RSV is an infection by second year of the life. More than 90% of the kids in the community will get RSV infection. So first 2 months of life, the maternal antibodies will protect the baby. 2 months to 6 months, they are really their antibodies are really low. That is the time when they get RSV and they become more sick, and they require oxygenation, hospitalization, or ICU care. So these antibodies will protect them for first 6 months. This makes better health for the kids.
Interesting.
I have one extra thing. This RSV vaccine is also available for more than 65 years. If you see RSV mortality, it is more in more than 65 years than less than 60, means in kids. Kids, you will see mortality around less than 500 kids throughout US. But in adult population, it is more than 10,000 adults die with RSV who are more than 65 years. Now the vaccine is available for them, much safer to take vaccine rather than getting the disease. And each adult is at different phase of the life, with diabetes, without diabetes, hypertension, without hypertension. So they have different risk factors. If you have risk factors, better to choose to get RSV vaccination, even though it is not in my arena, but I thought I will get into this.
I appreciate it. No, thank you very much for doing that. And it sounds like with some of this newer treatments and things, as you mentioned, cystic fibrosis, some of these other lung diseases and lung ailments, that could maybe be helpful in treating some of these as well down the road as this drug becomes more widely available or treatment becomes more widely available.
Usually the RSV infections are more common in less than 2 years of life.
Right.
After 2 years of life, there are other infections which are common in cystic fibrosis. Or so this may not be extending to that side of the, but definitely there are other things which are happening in cystic fibrosis which will be helpful
okay.
for them.
Got it. Very, very good to know. And that brings us to another important part of our conversation this morning, which is to talk about vaccines and how helpful they can be for children and the rest of us. And so I wanted to ask you a bit. There is an RSV vaccine. Is there not, right, that's fairly available?
RSV vaccine is for pregnant women.
Okay.
And for patients who are more than 65 years old. RSV vaccine is not there. But the monoclonal antibodies, which you can give as soon as the baby is born, if the parents wants to choose that. Monoclonal antibodies is different from vaccine.
Right.
Vaccine, you are giving only an antigen and your body is trying to prepare antibodies. Monoclonal antibodies, pre-prepared antibodies outside the human body, and we give the pre-prepared antibodies to the baby to protect the baby from RSV infection.
And that's what's new, what is emerging, right? And becoming more and more readily available.
As Jonathan has just described, like we had different company which was making synergies so far, which was more expensive and more criteria. Now this technique has come down with the cost so that they can justify using throughout the community.
Got it. Got it. Very good. Thank you very much. And Jonathan Palmer, I'm going to come back to you and talk about vaccines, too, for children. And so important for kids to get vaccinated. Certainly schools require some vaccinations. There are others that are available. But I imagine that you are a proponent of vaccines for children.
Oh, definitely, Scott. I'm very passionate about it. As you're probably aware, Dr. Linga did not grow up in America, grew up in India. And I spent time in South America, so we were acquainted with some of these diseases that we see in those countries that we don't see too much in America because our vaccine program has been so successful. That's a double-edged sword. When we vaccinate and people aren't getting sick, some people think, well, why get them? What's the point if we're not getting sick? You may have heard in the news recently that polio is back in America. Measles is always around. Some of these vaccines, they're not perfect. Our immunity can wean over time and make us susceptible to the diseases, especially as we get older. Then we definitely have susceptibility as we're younger. The babies are very susceptible to disease, and they can't get vaccines until certain ages. For instance, the flu vaccine. Flu is around every year. It definitely keeps us in business. We joke that we're trying to put ourselves out of business all the time by doing prevention as our primary goal. So we vaccinate at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, sometimes 9, 12, 15, 18, 24. We vaccinate a lot to prevent all these diseases. Then we also joke that when we have people decline the flu vaccine, which unfortunately has become more and more common, that we're going to be very busy this winter, that the hospital is going to be full of children with the flu, because it affects indiscriminately. Some of these diseases, when we think about them, they're like, oh, that's an older person disease, or that's a baby disease. The flu doesn't really care. It can affect all of us, and you don't have to have comorbid conditions to become very sick from the flu. So we encourage the flu vaccine for all. Part of the reason it's not as successful is the flu vaccine, as we know, the flu mutates every year, and we guess based on what's happening in, say, Australia, to what strain we're going to create in the vaccine. It doesn't provide 100% protection. You can still get the flu. And I think that turns people off a little. They're like, oh, I'm healthy. I don't need to get it. My children are healthy. But if you get the flu, it can cause major, major issues, not limited to death. And it can cause issues with inflammation that lead to increased risk of cardiovascular disease and other problems, increased risk of problems with asthma down the road. So we want all to be vaccinated to protect them. They can still get the flu, but they're not going to get near as ill, and they're not going to be able to transmit it near as readily to those around them.
Right. And that seems to be when I talk to folks who maybe talk about the flu vaccine and getting the flu shot year after year. And for folks who say they maybe didn't, or they got and they got the flu. And when they say they've got the flu and they talk about how horrible an experience it was, because it's certainly different from a cold or things that people maybe are more used to. At least it's been my experience that, you know, when you get the flu, you quickly decide you never want to really get it again, if you can help it.
Exactly. And you don't want to get it again because it can lead to these other issues Yes. down the road. So we encourage that vaccine. Of course, it's not required by schools. And some people's hesitancy to get vaccines is, well, this one's not required by the school, like HPV, for instance. We've been very successful in vaccinating against the human papillomavirus and decreased cervical cancers and penile cancers and other issues drastically. Actually, men now are the major not only carriers, but those affected by cancers caused by HPV. So we encourage all those kids 10 to 12 years old to get vaccinated against that one as well, even though it's not required by the school. Of course, the school vaccines are important because that's where these things are transmitted, and that's why they're required. However, there's a lot of people that decide, well, I don't want vaccines, so I'm not going to school. And they homeschool, and we support those decisions. However, the vaccines are so important, even if your children are homeschooled. I think there's some misconceptions out there that, you know, we're healthy, we live in a clean country, we're not going to get these illnesses, and then we see these outbreaks of measles, like I alluded to. And we are fighting against ideologies sometimes when it comes to vaccines that are very interesting. This morning I was up early, thanks to daylight savings time, and I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, if you're financially well-to-do or financially stable, you may not have to worry about financial crises as much if you have something called an emergency fund. Money stashed away, because even though you may be financially stable, something could still happen. Something can come up, no matter how much money you make. Actually, medical providers are notorious for not being good with their money and living paycheck to paycheck like many others. But if you have this emergency fund, you're protected. And in a way, we think of vaccines the same way. You may not be exposed every day to these illnesses, but let's say you go to Disney World or Disneyland and there's someone there with measles. We've heard about this before, no shame on Disney, but mass congregations of people, and they bring it home, and now you're infecting everybody, even those who have had the vaccine and it's starting to not work as effectively as they get older, and definitely those who are not vaccinated yet, like children under one. So there's not only a personal benefit to vaccines, but also a public health benefit. You may say, well, I might not get the flu and get sick, but I could give it to my grandma, who gets very ill. So we like to think about those things too, both protecting yourselves and the community.
Right. Very good point. Dr. Lingo, I wanted to ask you a little bit too about vaccines and maybe how important they are, and maybe from a little bit of your background as well.
Yeah. I grew up in India, and I practiced in India for good I started in 1995 till 2013, so 18 years in India. So I've seen everything what we don't see here. Like I've seen plenty of measles during April to May, exactly during the summers. All the floors used to be filled with fleas, measles, and complications of measles, especially pneumonias. So I was a volunteer during the polio eradication, where we used to give all the kids like oral polio monthly once for 12 months throughout all the kids till 15 years. So I was volunteering in that. So I know how these infectious diseases cause deadly outcomes in the pediatric population. So I've seen diphtheria, people who didn't have seen diphtheria. I've seen pertussis very closely. Many who didn't have seen a tetanus, but I've had two tetanus in my life throughout in India. So very unfortunate, but I have seen all these deadly diseases in a clinical practice. I used to practice like a pediatric oncologist in India. We used to treat with cancer. But because of the blood transfusion, I used to see hepatitis B in the kid at end of full treatment. I used to be so sad, like hepatitis B vaccine was like not under public health. It was like pay and take vaccine. So most of the parents could not afford that vaccines at that point of time. So they didn't give their children, but they were treated for leukemias. Now they have hepatitis B, which is like unheard of, but it is so common. So I want to take two scenarios here. One, as a community, health is because of whole community. It doesn't happen because of one person. It's not any personal choice for health of full community. In a community, we have a set of people like less than 6 month old and more than 65 year old. Less than 6 month old, unfortunately, you cannot give flu shot. Less than 2 month old, you cannot even start any vaccines for them. These are all the kids in pediatric population. These new babies and less than 6 month old are the main people who get more sick, even though they don't have any health conditions. These are the number one cause of the pediatric mortality because of the infections. There are many other reasons of the mortality. Because of the infections, usually less than 1 year is the number one cause of infection-related mortality. Now coming to more than 65-year-old, their immune system is not so robust. If you give vaccine also, they cannot make up vaccine. So the people who are eligible to take vaccine, if they participate in all the vaccine programs, then you are protecting the patients and the population who cannot vaccinate or who cannot mount infection. Then I have third group of people whose immune system is not strong enough to make immunity. They are taking like rheumatological treatment, or they are on kidney transplant list, or they are on cancer chemotherapy, or they have immune deficiency. We don't have all this population like very rampant, but in a community of good 50,000, I will see like 1,000 to 2,000 won't be eligible to take, or if they take also, they cannot mount the immunity. To protect all these people, if the eligible people takes vaccines, then it is most useful for whole community. This is called herd immunity. I want to go through one more thing. Recently, I went to infectious disease conference, and number one cause for mortality due to flu, it is like 200 people die in United States, 200 to 400. I am talking only pediatrics. Out of this, they went back and looked at who got vaccines, who didn't get vaccine. There is a big 50% of the pediatric population who died didn't get vaccine for flu shot. So we would have avoided that 100 deaths if the patient has got vaccine. And the best thing is they didn't have any medical problems. They didn't have any significant medical problems for them to die at that point of time. But unfortunately, the choices or the explanation or amount of information we can gather from vast information is there in the internet, but we have to choose correct people to know how much we have to take information and how we have to go with the vaccines. I strongly recommend flu vaccines, as Jonathan is telling my colleague, like flu will help you from decreasing symptoms, decreasing hospitalization, decreasing death. That's what you want if you get flu shot.
Very true, very true. I think we forget every year that the flu kills people every season, every year, children, adults, seniors, and we kind of forget that, I think.
10,000 to 30,000 adults will die and 100 to 200 children die every year.
In this country?
Yes, in this country.
Yeah. For flu. Not worldwide, in the United States.
In United States. Flu is very common, very common.
Right.
So
interesting. Very good. Well, we're just about out of time, but you had one more thing to add?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes.
I have one thing. Yesterday, I met a two-month-old who came for vaccination. She's a teacher. I don't want to relieve any of their things, but she gives me good history. I told her, hey, mother, do you want today to get vaccinated? Definitely, she told. Then she gave her grandmother had polio, and she was on lung machine for 4 years, and she had... four knee replacement, two hip replacement, and she survived for 65 years. And she tells, like, anytime she feels depressed, she thinks about her, how much she went through during that period of time, like 1940s to 1960s. And she always advocates. She's a teacher. She advocates vaccines. And she tells, like, vaccines are so important. So I'm just giving you one other scenario, like lifetime scenario, where it can happen in our families, but one, two generations, we are living healthy, we forget. That is a problem.
Very true. And that's just a few generations ago that polio was a major impact on many people's lives and for a long time. And so that's a great success story of the vaccine community. So thank you for sharing that this morning. As I said, gentlemen, we're just about out of time, but just final thoughts. I guess if folks would like to... come see you or talk about vaccines or sign up their kids to get vaccines, Mr. Palmer, can they make an appointment?
Definitely. We're always accepting new patients. And if we're super successful preventing all these diseases, we still have a lot else to do.
That's true.
We have four pediatric mental health specialists, and we do a lot of mental health care. So we're happy to help in any way we can in the community.
Very good. We didn't even touch on mental health. So
next time,
that will be the reason to have you all back. So thank you. Thank you very much. Great to have you both here. Thank you so much, Dr. Vijay Linga. Thank you for being here. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Scott. It is so useful to do this program.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. And Mr. Palmer, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. And thank you, San Juan County.
You bet. Very good. Thank you for my guests. Back with more on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.